And we're back, and you are listening to Villaincast, BJJ Antiheroes with myself, Chris the Villain Pains, and welcome to Reap the Week. But first, a quick thank you to our members at In Theory BJJ Concept Driven Jiu-Jitsu for fight commentary, technique and concept videos, private coaching, monthly webinars and Q&A sessions. Please visit www.patreon.com/intheorybjj. It's just myself this week. Naki is celebrating Eid, so Eid Mubarak to all those celebrating. So without further ado, since it's just myself, we'll jump straight into Jimmy's mailbag. There's been quite a few great questions this week. There's always great questions, but it's been a really good week as well. First question. Do clubs need a mat enforcer, or is this indicative of old school culture? So as someone who has ran a jiu-jitsu gym now for 14 years, good God, and I've had plenty of people come through the doors in those 14 years, you do need someone who is capable of violence. Just because the amount of times you have people who are expecting tough jiu-jitsu to come in and they want to train tough and you just need someone who can control them. And this is for, taking this a bit wider now. I think you should abuse beginners a little bit when they first start. For your own safety, but also for their safety. I always go quite tough on beginners. I don't submit them. I control them. That's because there's the, especially if they have no control over their emotions, control over their limbs, you're more likely to get hurt, just clocked in the face or something along those lines, especially if they want to get quite aggressive. And so you do need those tough people on the mat to just control those people, not beat the hell out of them, just make sure they are kept safe and until they've calmed down. I actually think it's quite dangerous sometimes to put white belts together, brand new white belts together, because they're more likely just to hurt each other. Or even like smaller blue belts or higher white belts, I think it's dangerous to put them with brand new beginners because they just don't have the control yet. I'm much happier watching brand new beginners roll with mat enforcers, black belts, brown belts, good purple belts, people who can stop their errant ways. So it's not necessarily about the old style of gym culture. I'd say it was more a case of just safety for the regular members of the gym, but also safety of the person on the mats. Yes, I think gyms do need a mat enforcer. I think you need that person who can come in, because as much as you can talk beginners down and tell them to calm down and this, that, and the other, it's there's always the few. I always make sure I roll with every beginner, just for that very reason of, right, I'm going to give you some time. I'm going to try and tire you out a little bit, and I'm going to look after you. I'm going to taking this hit means that my other students don't get potentially hit in the face when they haven't got built that level of control yet. Yeah, I think it's gyms do need mat enforcers. So send in if you listen to this. Does your gym have a mat enforcer? What are they like? Are they a nice person or are they mean? next question. Oh, why does a 3-2-1 clap raise people's skill level by 7.2%? Do you clap? Do you do the 3-2-1? I saw it a lot when I was in America. Must be a sport hoorah kind of thing. I've never clapped for anything. Theatre shows, concerts, no one gets a clap. But definitely not in the jiu-jitsu gym. I can't really see the point. I guess I've never really looked into it enough that, and it feels a bit weird. It feels like, you know, because I'm not running a sports club in the kind of traditional sense. I'm trying to explain jiu-jitsu. So I didn't need people to get psyched up that way. I'm trying to explain the concepts. And that if you can get psyched up from the concept I'm trying to teach, then fair play to you. I can't psych you up. No, be my guest. If you want to clap, it makes you happy, clap. I can't see reasoning behind it. I know Preet used to have something about it. It's a weird tribal thing, and he purposely won't clap. I just don't, because I'm a fun sponge, and all those fun things I try and remove out of jiu-jitsu. We did do a poll recently. It was asked of my gym members, would you want to? I didn't instigate the poll, and it was overwhelmingly negative. So I do not think I'll be incorporating this. I don't think I can do some sort of experiment to see if it makes people happier. So I can't really offer much insight into this. I guess because I haven't got Naki here, I'm going to ask a lot of these questions out to you guys. So if you're listening to this, please, I'll put something up on my Instagram today over the next couple of days. Just, comment, answer a couple of questions, and I can post them on the stories. I'd be interested to hear what you think. Do you clap? Why do you clap? Has it just been a thing? I think there are a few of those cultural things that just kind of get hung over in jiu-jitsu, such as us and professor. That's another one. There's so many weird martial arts things that get carried over. I came through in traditional martial arts initially, so bowing to come on the mat, bowing between partners, taking a knee if you're sorting your gi out or facing the wall. There's so many various things that I recognize from those days that I see in jiu-jitsu, and I just didn't bring them over. Considering I had such a wealth of experience in doing them, it would have been very easy to run a gym with those involved. But we're a bunch of adults rolling around on the floor wearing pajamas or spandex. I can't really see the point in making it weirder. It doesn't need to be any weirder than it already is without us cosplaying as something else, which I think I've said this before. It's some sort of weird inverse racism kind of thing. Like, I remember back in, you know, the earlier days of my martial arts experience, you know, doing Japanese jiu-jitsu or karate or any of those kind of sports. And the idea that, or anything like kung fu, you'd meet, you know, if you came across someone from China, from Japan, it's like a weird kind of automatic, oh, they must be better at kung fu, karate, jiu-jitsu, judo, etc., etc. No particular reason why. Like, just as much as anyone else in the world can be good at those sports. But it's the same with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, is that we've taken all these weird isms from the Brazilian culture of how they would do jiu-jitsu down there, that again kind of came from traditional Japanese culture, and we then imitate. And it's like, no, just let's just play this sport. It doesn't have to be, let's just enjoy the game, enjoy understanding the physics and physiology of it. Don't have to add in weird cultural things. It's unnecessary. And then bad hungovers can come with them as well. We're just playing a game. And imagine it's like a PlayStation game, and I've just played the game longer in my gym, and so I've got some ideas. That kind of comes into, as well, the whole belt system, is this idea that certain people can't teach because they're certain belts. If you are, again, I liken it to playing a game, like on Tekken or something, on the PlayStation, like a fighting game or any kind of game, is that I'm just someone who's played the game a really long time and I'm all right at it. I can kind of explain how the controls work to someone who can't play at my level. If someone else is also winning at the game, doing all right at the game, it doesn't matter what belt that is, if they've got a skill advantage over someone else, then teach them, explain it to them. why do we have to be a certain belt to be able to teach it? I mean, this goes into... Here we go. I knew there was to be a question at some point that fucking opened the floodgates. I think I said it on the previous week, so there's, we don't, you know, us black belts who run gyms, we don't have official coaching education. We don't go to university or anything like that to learn how to coach. I mean, you have black belts who are also teachers and coaches from, you know, who have been trained in that skill from other things. But the majority of us, again, you know, you get a black belt because you could beat the shit out of people and do it really well. And then all of a sudden, like, yeah, you can explain how to do this sport. Doesn't mean you're a good coach at all. Doesn't mean you can explain it. You might come across people who can, but that's an accident. It's not by design. And so the idea that, you know, a lower belt who, okay, they're not winning a competition, or, you know, they're not able to win against higher belts, but the idea that they can't explain the sport when they have a skill advantage over someone else, like, no, of course you can. It's all arbitrary. All these belts are arbitrary. I mean, there's no defined characteristic of what each belt bloody means. Apart from, they're tougher than that one. So, I mean, we don't necessarily in jiu-jitsu, I mean, some people have tried to quantify it. We don't even have a curriculum. So you can barely even say that, oh, this person has mastered the curriculum when there isn't one. It's very arbitrary about all what all these levels means, and we just kind of all came to an agreement on it. So to say that someone who has no coaching qualification is more qualified to coach than someone else who doesn't have a coaching qualification in a belt system that's entirely arbitrary beggars belief. So yeah, if you're a white belt and you've got good ideas and you have a skill advantage over someone else, just teach them. Show them it. Why not? And if you're the same with every other belt, blue, purple, brown, just take the belts out of jiu-jitsu. It just creates a weird hierarchy. It's unnecessary. Next question. How to break defensive postures in back control. By this, I think the question is coming from the place of, what if you've got back control and the other person is doing defensive postures, as in the preet stuff, etc. Good question. So a couple of years ago, I went to a class by Wim de Putter at one of the Globetrotters camps. I think it was Heidelberg. And he did a brilliant class called Koala, the Panda Killer. And he explained all these ideas of defense, of you can move in three different ways. You can extend your... So imagine, you know, you're sitting in your chair or your car or wherever you are right now listening to this. You can either double yourself over and put your head next to your knees, so you're contracting your spine, or you can completely extend your spine out and arch yourself backwards. That's one plane of motion. The second option is to be able to rotate on the spot. You can turn left or your body left or right. And the third option is to move laterally your shoulders or your hips. So I can drop my shoulder down towards my left hip or my right hip, or move my hips away and etc. So I can go forward, back, left, right, side, side. And a lot of the panda stuff is just going in the way that makes the most sense that the other person, because you can't control both directions at the same time. If you're stopping me from turning left, I can probably turn right. If you're stopping me from extending, I can probably contract. And if you're controlling my shoulders, you're probably not putting effort into my hips. And that's where panda kind of came from, I believe, is that it just makes sense that this is allowing me to use all those things at once. I'm using a combination of those things that people probably aren't dealing with. They're not stopping me from contracting forwards, they're not stopping me from turning a certain direction, and I'm moving my shoulders away. It wasn't until I actually went to Wim's class I understood panda better. And so trying to then reverse engineer all this, is I actually then I asked my students to try and kill all those things. Try and stop contraction extension. Try and stop left and right rotation. Try and stop hip and shoulder movement. It was almost impossible because you're putting so much effort into controlling this person to then actually release them and actually go for chokes when they are aware of those are the places they should be moving into. It's quite difficult. And so what I kind of realized there is that to go into almost like an MMA kind of perspective here is it's almost like we're polishing a turd when it comes to back control, is that we're trying to hold a position that is essentially quite difficult to hold because we're on our backs with someone on top of us. We're like effectively in like a backwards guard, trying to control all these different points of movement whilst also working for our chokes. And it's quite an arduous situation. But if you look at MMA, simpler response is just put them face down in the ground. Because once they're face down the ground and you bottom them out and they've got nowhere to go, they can't turn left, right, they can't contract. And so I attack from the back if I've got a good seatbelt and I can quickly hunt for an arm and shut them down and kind of straightjacking them up a little bit. Other than that, I always draw people face down. Or I attack them from turtle, I get a hook in, and I just belly them straight into the ground. I don't bother rolling them at all. And there's a gym that's had to deal with people who understand Panda and then understood this system, this combination system of escape. It was the only thing that kind of fixed it. It was just to ignore, instead of working directly from back control, because that's what I mean by the polishing of the turd, is I said to the students, right, I didn't show them where I wanted them to start from. I said, right, from back control, try and make it work. And they all started from that seated position when your legs are around someone else with two hooks in, like the general position that we use to demonstrate back attacks. Except why are we starting from there? And we kind of, we try and make something work because that's where we think we should make it start from. Instead of chucking it all out and going, right, does that even make sense in the first place? Not really. Right, then I'll start from somewhere else and back mount made much more sense. And if you fail it, if they do manage to get a hook out and rotate, you've got mount. You're still on top. And you've probably cost them a lot of energy in their rotation. So for a general kind of consensus general idea on how to deal with that, are you trying to polish a turd by starting in regular back control, or can you just roll them face down and kill Panda before it is allowed to start, really? I like that question. Something to consider. We did talk about it a few years ago at the class. Maybe it's worth making a video on it. Next question. Worst injury you have had? I'll ask this out. What's the worst injury you've had? I might put that on the Instagram ready for tomorrow's release of this. Worst injury I've had. It's probably related to jiu-jitsu at some point, but a herniated disc in my back. That's pretty unpleasant. I think my collarbone got jolted out about 5 years ago. It hasn't gone back in yet. I'll have to take a picture of that as well. It sits out ever so slightly with the connection to the shoulder. It kind of, it sits out like a little lump over the top, and you can kind of move it around, and it just hasn't gone back in. I remember a quote saying, once you're over the age of 30, you don't get injuries in jiu-jitsu anymore. You just get small, permanent disabilities. I've never had anything terrible. More than, broken noses, torn eyelids, and, the regular kind of bumps and knocks that come with jiu-jitsu. I'm sure there are people out there who've had some horrific injuries. I've been quite lucky. I think a way of kind of controlling this now, and, I think now I'm older and less young, dumb, and everything else. I do kind of, I try and bring a lot more health and safety into jiu-jitsu than just fuck about and find outism. And so I like the idea of, you know, it's very rare that we see people get injured from submissions. If you work on the control and maintain control and give yourself 5 seconds of control before you look at them and go, look, I can't have the submission here. It improves your positional controls, such as like, you know, ashi with heel hooks, etc. And your bite and all the other things you need. But also limits that kind of quick reaction panic in snapping on submissions. I never hear of anyone just snapping on a submission. It's not possible. Not if you're holding it for the control for five seconds prior. The only thing that it was ever going to really happen is just knock some jiu-jitsu when you have two adults just butting heads the way we do. Shit happens. But I think as well with the culture of we're not in competition with each other. It's a rising tide and we're trying to make everyone better on the mats as a team. That also controls chance for injury because we're not looking at just straight up hurting each other for our own benefit, like to prove that we're the top dog on this hierarchy. But it's like, no, I want to make you better, so I care about you. Because if I make you better, the whole gym gets better, I get better, we all rise together. I think there's interesting ways of controlling injury in that way. Yeah, what's been your worst injury? I mean, there's been some terrible ones out there. And was it caused by a general knock or a ill-applied submission? Next question. How important is strength and conditioning, in my opinion? Jiu-jitsu is a game of power. And it's something that we try our best to control. It's a variable we try and control when it comes to competition, in that other sports try and control variables to measure something. The examples I like to use are horse racing, where, to my knowledge, jockeys have to weigh in. Because then you're you know, if all the jockeys weigh the same, you're measuring the horse, not a horse with the lightest jockey you can find. With road racing on bikes, like Tour de France, bikes can't be below a certain weight because then you're measuring the cyclist, not the cyclist with the lowest bike that they can possibly make. And then we do this with jiu-jitsu, is that we control for gender, we control for weight, and we control for age. Because if we control those three variables there, those are all power factors. And if we control those, then we're now measuring the person's skill. I mean, we can't control it down completely, but it's a pretty good way of doing it. And so if you look at the idea of, is strength and conditioning important? Well, conditioning, you know, obviously cardio is a massive factor of this game. And strength, yeah, well, it's a power-based sport. So if you can maximize your strength for your weight, you have an advantage against someone who hasn't maximized power-to-weight ratio. I mean, it was one thing I was kind of obsessed with when I was coming up in this sport and I was competing a lot more, is how much I could get my numbers up without changing my weight. I modified my training to maximize how much force I could generate without gaining any size. To give myself an edge in competition. I highly recommend looking into Martin Rooney if you're interested in that kind of stuff. He does something called Training for Warriors, where there are, he has plenty of books. Warrior Cardio is just stunning. Training for Warriors, Ultimate Warrior Workouts. He did a lot of work in a lot of UFC athletes. So if you, I think this is his first book, Train for Warriors. It did a lot of BJJ people with, I think it was either Hayan or Henzo and Bralu, I think possibly demonstrated some of the stuff in the book. It was quite, you know, amazing that he had these people to demonstrate his workouts for him. And then in his last cardio book that had Warrior Cardio, it was Jim Miller, Frankie Edgar, you know, guys who are known for their cardio in the northeast of the US, you know, back in the UFC. Guys, brilliant. So I highly recommend, if you can, get hold of those books. I know they're on Google Books maybe, but you can probably find them on Amazon as well, like old copies. Martin Rooney, massively helped my game. I mean, Yeah, he showed me some, I went to one of his seminars where he was looking at how to improve your entire body with just push-ups, and it took my bench into crazy numbers after that. Okay, final question. Opinions on reintroducing cranks into BJJ, because they're brilliant in catch wrestling. So I think they need to be understood. I think understanding your neck is very important. Maybe I'm just getting boring because of my age. But putting pressure through someone's spine in such a way, there's a reason why it's predominantly banned, and it's because it causes damage. As someone who's got a spinal injury, and I've known other people to get spinal injuries, from getting stacked on their head or whatever, it's hard to come back from that kind of stuff, and it sucks. It sucks every single day. And cranking someone's neck, it's unpleasant, and can cause injury. And when people haven't got the control, it causes even more injury. I mean, I take that kind of stuff really seriously. It does work, but it works at what cost? I think you should understand about looking after your spine, absolutely, because you don't understand, you can't really control what other people are going to do, so you try and do your best to look after yourself. But it's so easy to injure people. I mean, one of the techniques I will not teach is head outside single legs, for the simple reason that, that technique is from a sport, wrestling, where you can't grab someone by the head, you can't jump onto your own back, and you can't choke people. Yet, so they can do it. But in jiu-jitsu, we can grab people just by the neck, and we can jump backwards into guard. And, that was banned at white belt because you had people jumping onto their back with a head grip and putting people in hospital for life, putting people in wheelchairs for life, crippling people. Because essentially, a lot of force was put through someone's neck with limited control. And that terrifies me. And same with jumping guard and so many other things where without that lack of control, there's so much opportunity to really hurt another person. And so cranks, they do work. Absolutely, they do work. Putting pressure through someone's jaw and face and twisting up their neck absolutely works. My personal opinion is I don't want to hurt people. I'm doing my best to not hurt people because, jiu-jitsu is predominantly, shall I say, a relatively middle-class sport. We have to afford these expensive gis, these expensive competitions, these expensive mat fees. And to do that, we all have jobs. We all have lives. We don't live by jiu-jitsu. And so to have someone just lose their shit on a night and just put pressure through our neck and wreck us and potentially really injure us, it's not worth it. It's one of those things that we can kind of live without. I know it adds a level of realism to it. But I'm always considerate of someone else's neck. Like if someone shoots in for a head on the outside single leg by accident, just their head ends up there, there's no way I'm jumping backwards. Doesn't matter if that guillotine looks slick. Like, I'll control their neck, I'll control their body, and not allow them to push me over. I won't wrap underneath their jaw, I won't grab hold of their head tight, I'll more frame into their shoulders to stop them. Because I care about them. I care about them, again, even if they don't care about themselves and they're just trying to throw me around. It's not worth it. I'm not going to fall back and I'm not going to injure them. Yes, need to add that one out into the wider sphere. It's not the same about Naki, is it? It's always fun listening to his ideas. Maybe he'd have a different approach to this. Maybe he's the villain and I'm not. This has been fun. Very interesting questions this week. Please keep sending them in. Naki should be back next week. I am at the Eco Camp in Florence this weekend. I intend, my stuff is packed to record my classes. So if you are interested in, I'm not necessarily going to be teaching much about, you know, just eco drills. I'm just going to do some, like, okay, here's some drills, learn jiu-jitsu in an eco way. I want to try and explain my way and how I got there of teaching this way, and where I think it applies and where I don't think it applies. So I look forward to actually recording that, because it's some stuff I don't really have, think I've ever really put live into words or anything. So if you're interested in that, it'll be on In Theory Sunday, Monday, Tuesday kind of time, by the time I get back and upload it. So if you're interested in that, please check it out. I look forward to seeing whoever's at the Eco Camp in Florence tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, Sunday. But this has been Reap the Week with myself, Chris, the Villain Pains. And thank you.